I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The Michael K. Show.
Just an unreal way to win a basketball game. And that building was absolutely up for grabs.
Why do we say up for grabs?
It's something I heard Michael say.
I hate it. It doesn't make sense.
Well, say it to the guy that I first
Michael,
heard
why
say
do you
it.
Say up for grabs? It doesn't make sense.
Up for grabs mean that it could be taken over. The building is up for grabs. If you don't like it, why don't you take a flying
it doesn't make
off
sense.
A roof?
Up for grabs implies it could go either way.
No,
that's what up for grabs means.
I agree with Peter in one sense. I don't like it. But I disagree because I love it.
Wait, but it
because
make
it's
sense.
Up for, he's right. It's
not
for,
up for grabs.
It's complete
it's
bad
the
luck. We don't know what's going to happen. They
that's
might
not what up for grabs.
They might
it's up for grabs.
They
no.
might charge Monument Park.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, baby. You never know where this show's going to go.
That's what I love
gonna
about
say,
it.
Say, what it's going to do. It's so organic.
Well, it's like it's almost as if topic-wise, this show is up for grabs.
You know what? And that would be the way you like it being used.
Oh, right? Properly. The way it's supposed to be used. So, but I will say, Michael, there was a feeling last night, a je ne sais quoi. You know who I got a text message from?
Billy Crystal.
That's right.
Really?
I did.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
I got a text from Billy Crystal during the game, and he asked if I was at the Garden. I said, no. Are you at the Garden? I said, no, I'm having a Seder on Long Island. And he said, I'm at a Seder in Los Angeles. But we were discussing the game. He was very, very excited. You know, we've given Billy clemency because we have a special love. So Don doesn't judge Billy for the fact that he's a Clippers and Knicks fan. He gives him both without calling him a fraud.
Right,
right,
yeah,
Don?
But Don is going to have a legitimate question for Mr. Crystal. If the Clippers advance to the finals and the Knicks advance to the finals, well, you root for
I think he would root for the Knicks.
I don't think so. He's a real big-time Clipper fan.
That's the thing, though, because he has the season ticket forever. He doesn't have them, I believe, anymore, but he had the long-time season tickets to the Clippers.
I think he would have to make a choice and stick with it.
At that point.
At that point.
That's a forever choice kind of moment. And it's a moment he's never expected to see. I'm guessing the Vegas odds on it happening would have to be, what, 500 to 1? I mean, it's not high odds that both teams make the finals. You know what? Maybe no. Maybe it's like 40 to 1 now, 75 to 1. But anyways, it felt like that kind of day. You know, they kept showing Ben Stiller and Chris Rock sitting together, all the legendary Knicks there. And then to have it play out the way it played out, you know, it's like if you were to describe the sequence in a basic way, Knicks down 5, under a minute left, back-to-back threes, they win. To be honest, to me, in this version of the NBA, that doesn't sound like a crazy thing to have happen. But the way that it happened, Michael, the way that it played out, the turnover, the missed three, then the board, the fact that Brunson had missed six straight, then clangs one and it falls in, when you add it all up, it ended up being a breathtaking moment for the ages.
Now, when you look at what playoffs, you know, bring you, they bring you forever moments. So yesterday in the two playoff games that interest New York, you had an unwinnable game that was won. You had an unlosable game that ended up being lost. So let me ask Don, what was more shocking? The Knicks coming back and and they had a 4% win probability, or the Islanders losing a game they led 3-0?
Well, by the way, Knicks Clippers plus 5,000.
Plus 5,000.
So Billy's not really have to worry about it.
Yeah, I don't think he has to worry about it. No, without question, it's the Knicks. Without question.
Really?
Well, because think about it.
Because the Islanders are a worse team.
Well, the Islanders are on the road against an outstanding team.
How much time was left with them up 3-0?
It was 3-1 with Jarvis scored with like 9 minutes to play in the game to make it 3-2. And they had 12 shots on goal. They didn't have the puck. It felt inevitable that the game was going to get tied. Now, how crazy, 9 seconds after it was tied, they took the lead. That was the shock of it, Michael, because it all just came crumbling down. But at 3-2 with 9 minutes to go in the game, the way the Islanders were playing, the way the Hurricanes were possessing the puck.
No, it's like the ice was tilted.
It felt to me like if the Islanders win this game, they're just going to hang on for dear life and just hope that they could, the clock expires. They were even talking about it. Brendan Burke and Butchie were just talking about just Patrick Waugh looking up at the scoreboard. Just let the time go here. Let's just get to, let the clock zero out. Let's get out of Dodge here. Let's get home. So there felt like an inevitability. Again, not 9 seconds. And I was hoping at that point, all right, just get to overtime, and then maybe you catch a break, because it was really bad in the second period, Michael. I mean, they did not have the puck at all in the second period. Started the third period is a little bit better, and then the ice got tilted again. So if they had gotten overtime, maybe you win the faceoff, you catch a break, you score the goal, and you get out of Dodge 1-1. So, no, what the Knicks did, Michael, because I think at that point, I think the Sixers announcers were crazy to think it was a foregone conclusion the game was over. But at that point, I can't imagine even the most diehard Knicks fan felt like there was any chance they were going to win that game, especially in the fashion in which they won it. But I would think an Islander fan at 3-2 with 9 minutes to go would not have been shocked if I said to them, you're not winning this game.
Now Peter also has made the point, he made it during our pre-show meeting too. You know, this is the NBA. It's really not that big a deal that they, I hope I'm not misrepresenting what you said. Not that it shouldn't be that shocking.
If you remove the situation, it's not that shocking to be down five in that spot.
In the situation, though, according to Elias, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks are the first team over the last 25 years to win a playoff game in regulation after being down five or more points in the last 30 seconds. So, I mean, it's shocking what they did. And Philadelphia had to do a lot to mess that up.
Right.
Now, I look at the two series, maybe you guys will think I'm nuts, they're kind of almost mirroring each other. The Islanders, you could say, outplayed the Hurricanes in both games. And the Hurricanes won both games.
No, not last night, Michael.
Oh, but the first game, though.
First game, yeah, sure. For the first game, they could have very easily won that game.
All right, so the Sixers probably outplayed the Knicks last night. The first game was up for grabs.
Yes.
But, and the home team won both games. Now the Islanders have to come back to the island and do the unthinkable against a really good team. And the Knicks, I don't think the Islanders are going to win the series. I think we all came into it thinking that. We all came into it thinking the Knicks were going to win the series.
Right.
But strangely, I don't know if you guys feel like this. I'm not 100% positive and comfortable with the Knicks yet, because they have not played great. They've played gritty. They've played gutty. Their best player has not played well.
But who cares? But like, I don't understand this.
You shouldn't care, but you hope that it doesn't bite you, Peter.
No, but I just think you're looking at this so half empty. I look at it as you played the first two games in the series in which you're the favorite. You're supposed to win the series. You had two games at home in which your best player played poorly and other aspects of your game didn't work, and you came out with two wins. To me, that says this is a team that could maybe do more than we even realized, because while playing poorly, they're winning games. That's what great teams do.
Here's my concern, Peter. Are they playing poorly because they're playing poorly, or are the Sixers making them play poorly? Is the combination defense that they have on Brunson, is it the right sauce to stop Brunson?
But if
Brunson continues to get stopped, can the Sixers win these next two games?
See, but again, that's why I feel good about it, Don, because we already knew Philly would be an awkward matchup for this team. Mm-hmm. And Philly's doing the job they thought they would do, and you're still up 2-0.
Well, you're saying two different things here. I mean, can Philadelphia win the next two in Philly? Yeah, I think they can, but that doesn't mean they're going to win the series, because they eventually come back to New York. So you could look at it like the glass half full. Hey, they can play even better than they have played and win this series going away, rather than thinking about, well, eventually it's going to catch up with them unless Brunson wakes up. But I knew the Sixers were going to be tough. But what we found out in these two games, especially last night, this Knicks team has a will and a desire to win games. Like, they don't get down on themselves. They never give up. And they've got that compete that I, quite frankly, don't know the Philadelphia 76ers have, Michael. You know, I don't know if they've got the same kind of resiliency. They haven't had to, you know, because they knew Embiid was going to come back, all right? And they didn't exactly survive without him. They dropped down. They almost had to go into the play-in. Yeah, they're fantastic when he's in there, but he's not at 100%. You saw the way That game was winnable on Saturday, yet the Knicks were the better team down the stretch. Certainly was a game they should have won last night and didn't. So if I'm a Sixers fan, I'm just wondering, does my team have the heart and the desire to win this series, to win four of the next five and advance to the next round? So I think if you're a Knicks fan, you got to be thrilled. Now, are they going to sweep them? I don't think so. I would expect Philadelphia to bounce back at home. But I have a really good feeling that I think the Knicks can come back up 3-1 and finish this off in five.
See, but here's my fear about this whole playoff run for the Knicks. And again, I picked the Knicks to win in six in this series. I was out getting lunch for me and Jody.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And the guy said to me, "Do you think the Knicks are better without Randle?" And I said, "No, I don't. I don't think they're better without Randle. I would feel so much better about the Knicks going to the Eastern Conference Finals if Randle was there. Because without Randle there, all the defense has to concentrate on now is Brunson. If you had 25 and 10 standing there in the paint and using his strength to get in easy baskets, it's a completely different series. So I think that what you're seeing now is that Philadelphia can concentrate all of its defensive prowess on stopping Brunson and then hoping that the other guys don't hit their threes. And yesterday, they hit their threes at propitious times, and they ended up getting a win. But boy, this series would be a lot easier for the Knicks if they had the threat of Julius Randle. I just think proves to everybody that Randle is important to this team.
But it's just another piece of adversity this team seems to feed off of. It's like you just throw an obstacle in front of them, and they just thrive jumping over it, moving on to the next one. Now, I do think it'll behoove the Knicks to see if they can make this a short series. Next up would be Milwaukee. I'm seeing people on Twitter saying that the next round will be easier. But the Bucks, if the Bucks finish off the Pacers, they're up 1-0. I think the Knicks are going to need some rest because the negative byproduct of how they play is that you can get worn down. Getting a break and winning this series in five and have Milwaukee and Indiana go long, I think would really behoove them for a run. But I think your concerns, Michael, for me, would be more, can this team win a championship as presently constituted with not having to rely on something other than Brunson? Like, what if everybody's going to go to school on what the Sixers are doing and the Knicks are going to have to find ways to win every night without Brunson scoring 40 points? I think that could be a long-term concern for them against the winner of Bucks Pacers, for them against Boston in the conference final. But for this series, the heart they have and the lack of heart it feels like the Sixers have, I think they'll be fine.
Let me give you a quick pinstripe report. Brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management. Gerrit Cole got out to 120 feet today. And according to Greg Joyce of the Post, that is typically as far out as pitchers will go before getting on the mound. That said, Cole was not sure when he will advance to throwing off the mound. He's off tomorrow and will go from there. Also, Aaron Boone told the assembled media today the Major League Baseball is not going to fine him for that ejection yesterday.
That's right.
He said on the podcast with John Boy, he doesn't know why it happened. He said he thinks, and he's heard that Major League Baseball is not happy with the ejection either. So we'll see how they handle it. I don't know. The umpires union is very strong. That's why some umpires that you could clearly see are terrible, they don't lose their jobs. So I don't think Major League Baseball is going to come out and verbally say that Hunter Wendelstedt was dead wrong, but they might tell him behind the scenes. But the most important thing for the Yankees, they played four games on this homestand. 3 9-inning games, 1 10-inning game. That's 37 innings. They've scored in 3 innings. And what you saw from the A's yesterday, don't get in the back end of their bullpen. The guy who came on and struck out Volpe, Soto, and Judge through 102, 103, and 102. So you got to get them early. You got to get their starter. Don't get into a close game at the end. And with the way the Yankees are hitting right now, you can get a close game at the end. One quick thing I wanted to say, because we're not going to have a lot of time to talk about baseball today. So DJ LeMahieu is going on a rehab assignment today. So everybody just assumes, see if you follow me, Don and Peter. Just assumes, okay, when he comes back, he's going to be the starting third baseman. And I'm going to take another one of my 20s, Peter.
Go ahead, take 20.
Why is he taking the job from Oswaldo Cabrera, who's done a great job? Why wouldn't he take the second base job from Gleyber Torres? Why is this just a fait accompli? You know, Oswaldo Cabrera's done everything you'd possibly want him to do. Gleyber Torres has been god-awful. No home runs, 2 runs batted in, Why wouldn't he be the second baseman? He could play second base. He's won a gold glove at second base. Why is it automatic that he takes over the third base job? Now, Boone hasn't said that. I'm just saying, think about it. If Glaber continues to not hit, he should be at second. Sit Glaber down and let him think about it. They can't keep running out a benign lineup like that.
Well, why would anyone in their right mind not want to see more from Cabrera, who's 25 years old and playing great baseball when he plays?
Well, because of the fact he's looked at as the guy that could play all over the place.
Right.
Glaber is also very young. I think he's 27 or 28, and he's going to be a free agent, so they think he's going to have a great year. But I think that that's weighing on him now, and that's why he's doing so terribly. And you need offense. So I'm keeping Cabrera in, and I'm putting DJ LeMayo at second. If the Yankees go to Milwaukee and DJ's ready and Glaber's still hitting like 150, I'm sorry, Glaber's taking a seat.
Now, I don't know if the Yankees would have any appetite to trade him. If he was playing well, they wouldn't need to because they want to try to win this season.
But if he's playing poorly, you get nothing for him.
And if he plays poorly, you get nothing for him. So he's probably going to leave and you're not going to get anything for him. I think that's inevitable. But I think what they're trying to do is hope that at some point in his walk year, he will wake up and he'll perform.
Of course.
But in the meantime, I kept thinking when you were given the stats about Cole and the distance throwing, I'm like, he should pick up a bat. That's your problem. Right? It's not Cole being out of the lineup and coming back. It's that somebody's got to be able to hit. So I guess they're hoping it's going to be him. But at some point, Michael, with so much importance winning right now, you can't worry about his contract or trying to get something out of him, whatever. Just play the best lineup.
Well, that's the Pinstripe Report brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management. For pain-free life, visit samwellpain.com today. Now, we haven't even talked about it yet, but we got the Rangers playing tonight, Don. What do the Capitals have to do to get a victory at the Garden? And the Rangers, I thought, played a very good game in Game 1. They play like that, they should be up 2-0.
No, they are just not a good offensive team. So that's why the Rangers are in such good shape. Because I don't think this is a great offensive team in the Capitals. It's not like the old days with Ovechkin and Oshie. They're going to struggle to possess the puck. They're going to struggle to get opportunities to score. So the Rangers got to keep doing what they're doing. They're the better team, without question. So don't get into penalty trouble. They're 14-for-14 on the kill in the 5 games they played, the 4 in the regular season and the game on Sunday. Just keep doing what they're doing. They're just a better team. Don't make mistakes and allow the Capitals to get back into it. Now, what's going on with my hair that everybody's talking about on my back?
You got to go like this.
I don't
tilt
see
your tilt your headphones back. No, just trust me. Just tilt back a tiny bit like this. That was it. You went a little too far, bro. There you go. You're good. You're good.
No, it's the things that people get caught up. I had a hair sticking up. Oh, it's a radio show.
I know, but you know what?
I look great today. I got my hair cut.
You do.
I got
a great trim.
So if a hair is out of place, that's on you.
I support
but
you in this.
I felt awkward, Michael, because as I was talking,
right,
I could see Anthony and Peter talking in the talkback, and then occasionally I'd see Peter glancing at the top of my head.
But you have like an alfalfa thing?
He did.
Yeah, well, because
so
my head,
what?
My head sets, and I guess so there was a rogue hair sticking out.
But your hair is glorious.
Oh, no, you kind of messed it up again.
Oh, I can't worry about it, all right?
No,
Look away.
I'm not upset by it.
Now we're going to have Steve Valiquette on the break of
Valley
for us at 4:30. We love Valley.
Yay!
By the way, we've been trying to get Valley on and President Biden for the last 3 months, and it's been just as tough. So we finally got Valley today. We're still waiting on Biden.
Yeah, we'll get him.
You think we'll get Joe?
Sure.
Now, is that just because Biden knows he's got New York, so he doesn't have to come on?
I don't know. I don't understand why either would be that difficult, but Valley has been really tough.
Well, he's in demand.
I know. I guess so is Joe. Let's go to the phones. Let's have a go with Capri in the Bronx. Capri.
Hello, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Oh, no.
Not what you want.
Wow.
Capri Sun is gone.
Wow. Capri Pants.
That's, you know what? That's the 7-year difference in our age.
Let's go to Ryan in Virginia. Ryan.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Great. You?
Good. So I'd like to weigh in on the upper grabs discussion here because I basically don't think you're arguing the same thing. And I know Peter kind of mentioned that. But Peter, I started where you were on this. And what I was missing initially is what was up for grabs. So tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you're saying or you're hearing that the arena's up for grabs between the two fan bases, Sixers and Knicks in this case. And what I think Michael and Don are saying is that the arena's up for grabs between the home fans and essentially the stadium, right, is they're going out of control. What's happening on court, on field, stadium's going wild. They've kind of taken it over. And that's what I think, that's where I think the disconnect is.
I you're correct, Ryan, and I have figured out that that's what they mean. It's just like hard for me to get there because you have a natural inclination to believe up for grabs would mean between two things that are could actually be competing, not a theoretical thing that can't compete.
Well, Karen Veenstra, you know, the conscience of the show.
Yeah, some would say.
It's kind of like a daughter of the show.
It's kind of like, you know, up for grabs means chaos.
Yeah, but then she lost me when she said, you know, not all phrases are literal. I mean, you know that, Peter. Have a great show, break a leg. And I said, well, let's not compare Michael's up for grabs to break a leg.
No, I think Karen was showing a little edge. She wants you to break your leg.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Here's Corrine in Manasquan. She wants to defend you, Peter.
Thank you.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
How you doing?
So I've just been listening to this debate, and the more it's been explained, the more I'm on Peter's side. I feel like the only way that that phrase makes sense in this scenario is if the stadium was filled half with Sixers fans and half with Knicks fans.
No. Yeah, because that's what up for grabs would mean.
Yeah, because then if it's up for grabs and the Knicks go ahead, the Knicks will get the stadium. If the Sixers go ahead, they get it. Otherwise, I mean, what's up for grabs?
Well how about this, Corrine?
They're sanity.
How about this? Here's what's up for grabs. Law and order.
Yeah,
law and order. Absolutely nuts.
That's how I took it. It's anarchy right now. The place is completely up for grabs. They're going nuts in the stadium. We don't know what direction it's going to go into.
Now I get
it. How is it up for grabs if they're already going crazy over the Knicks?
Because they'll take over the facility.
Maybe they'll storm the court.
The cops can't stop them. They'll storm the court. The place is up for grabs. They can take ownership of the garden.
Yeah, it's...
Again, I don't know. You guys are losing me.
No, but listen, because you don't want to play. No, that she doesn't want to take the ride. You guys don't want to take the ride.
No.
No, because obviously...
We can't find the ride.
No, but the ride is there.
I found it
No,
now.
She doesn't want to. I don't think they're going to storm the court. That's where the literal aspect...
Can't,
of it come in
just because
you're trying to be
phrase.
Too literal. I don't think anybody's worried that they're going to God forbid there's going to be something crazy happening where they're not going to leave the garden and it's now the 24 hours later and they can't get the Ranger fans in because they've taken over the place. That is a literal interpretation. But just go for the ride of, wow, we've got that one moment where we're really not sure how much crazier this fan base is going to go. Are they going to run onto the court? Are they going to do even something more crazy? It's just a fun phrase, and you people have really taken the absolute fun. All of a sudden now you've taken a great moment, and you made it algebra.
But Don, it is algebra. You're right. Even in algebra, it's right. Because one of the definitions in one of the top dictionaries in the world is up for grabs means in total chaos. When the market crashed, the whole office was up for grabs.
All right, so there you
go.
I never heard that. But I was talking about algebra and the fact that it's boring. It was a fun, exciting time, and now everybody wants to now break it down to where you've taken the fun out of it.
I just didn't understand it. Neither did she, but now I understand a little better.
You know what you've done, Peter? You've hijacked the show. I hope you're happy.
Well, you know what?
You took the show where we should have been breaking down the Knicks and the Islanders.
I didn't mean to.
And you turned it into an up-for-grabs show. I guess the show was up for grabs.
I didn't mean to. I was just making one point. That I'm like, you know what? I don't really like that phrase. That's all.
You know, why don't you make a call right now, Peter, to BetterHelp?
It's a great point, Michael. And I have a message brought to you by BetterHelp. How is your social battery? Is it up for grabs? Maybe you need some rest. Maybe you're bursting with energy, you know? Maybe you're incredibly tired. It can be easy to ignore that social battery, and sometimes we spread ourselves too thin, and before you know it, you're feeling just completely worn down, and the idea of a social gathering just feels impossible. So maybe you need to find a way to recharge. How do you do that? For me, therapy has been incredibly helpful, and I hope it could be that way for you too. Therapy can help you with coping skills, boundary setting, and empowerment. So be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking about therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient. It's flexible and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Peter today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Peter today.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we have the Rangers and the Capitals tonight. Coverage starts right after our show on 98.7 ESPN, and then the play-by-play will be at 7. Hey, MSG Networks will have Game 2 tonight, and every game of the series, Steve Valiquette, Henrik Lundqvist, and the very handsome John Giannone will anchor MSG studio coverage beginning at 6:30, and the puck drops at 7 on MSG Networks. Tune into MSG Networks for your hometown coverage of every game in round one, and we bring in our good friend who's on that show, Steve Valiquette. Steve, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing today?
Very good, fellas. Happy to be on with you guys.
Game one, Rangers win. Do they have to continue doing the same thing? What are the corrections that the Capitals have to make to try to get back in this?
Well, what we saw in game number one on Sunday was a very mature approach to the game for the Rangers. The first period was low event, but that was okay with them. And when they got up 3-1 in the second period, what I liked most was they didn't open the game up. And it seemed to me at that moment that Washington was trying to invite them into a rush game, and the Rangers didn't go for it. They were coming back. They were defensively responsible. Everybody was communicating. I saw good switches with the forwards and the D down low. They had layers, and they got down the ice without risking it offensively and maybe putting themselves in a position where Washington would counterpunch. The one weapon Washington does have is they have a power play, and Ovechkin is still very relevant on it. He had 9 power play goals from the All-Star game until the end of the season, and he really revitalized them. They were in 27th on the power play before the All-Star break, finished with the best power play in the NHL from the All-Star break to the end of the season. So if the Rangers can play with the same discipline, as much as Washington's going to try to adjust, the Rangers should have all the answers.
And the big question has been 5-on-5 play, you know, how good they are on special teams. But, you know, all 4 goals were scored 5-on-5. How big of a problem do you think it is moving forward for this Rangers team to be able to play better at even strength?
You know what it's been? It's not that they don't create enough at 5-on-5. It's they have a finishing issue at times.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the story of the season. And if you go back to the beginning of the season, they start 18-4-1. But the story around the team was, well, they don't score at 5-on-5. And I think when that message gets in the locker room, I know what it's like. Guys get uptight about it. They want to get their points. And guys like Panarin and Kreider and Zibanejad, they want to play a rush game, because when you skate up and down the ice with the puck and you outman the opponent, it's your best chance to score a 5-on-5. It's not mucking and grinding down low. And when that happened, the Rangers started falling behind. They had a terrible January, were able to recover their season with an amazing February, March, and April. But I don't think they have a 5-on-5 problem per se. at times they just have to reel it in and not put too much risk into their game, because when they are following it, when they're following their game plan, they can be very effective. And I think that's, look, the one issue I've had with the club all year is they give up too much off the rush, high danger chances at home, because they want to open it up for the fans. And I know what it's like for the guys. They want to open it up. And I think that if they can keep a team mindset together, they'll be okay. They just have to be cautious of not going for it too much with too much risk.
Now, you mentioned, Steve, the rough January, and one of the main culprits was the goalie. Shesterkin had a really bad month. What turned around for him? What got better?
You know, I remember from my own experience, and I was talking to Henrik about this, sometimes you just get so pissed off with the way you're playing. You get so ticked off that you figure it out. I can remember being in a slump where my agent called me and he said, hey, you better wake up or you're not getting a contract next year. And it was just that one call where it just went off. And sometimes it's a save. I felt like he went through a part of his season where it's tough for us as analysts to say it, but it has a look. He was in his head. He was thinking too much, and he had a really hard time playing. And it got so bad to a point where I thought the better option was to go with Jonathan Quick and let him sit for a little bit, and they did that. He sat for a few starts that he regularly would have played, and then I think he got ticked off, and he went out and played some good hockey. And I'll tell you what, it's not that easy playing against Washington. The one reason why is because there's a lot of time for Shesterkin to think in the crease in this series. Washington takes the fewest shots in the league that are still active in this playoff with the 16 teams remaining. They had 26.5 shots on average per game, which was 30th during the regular season. Their clear-sighted shots, the one where they see Shesterkin eyeball to eyeball, they don't shoot them. They only take 8 of those a game. That's 32nd in the league. There's 32 teams in the league. And their low-danger shots, they're easy ones, they're feelers, they're 31st there. So it's not a game where Shesterkin's going to have a lot of warm, easy shots to prepare him for a very difficult one, a breakaway or a 2-on-1. This is a mentally taxing series for him. He's not going to face a lot to keep him in the game.
Now, Charlie Lindgren's been really good against the Rangers. I thought he was even pretty solid in game one. The fact that he catches right-handed, and that is so rare in the NHL, how much can that throw a shooter off?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is they do have Louis Domingue up, and he's taking shots. So I think it's helpful to have a guy that does catch right in practice every day for the shooters to get a look at it. So that's a positive. It's a different thing. Guys hate it. I know they hate it, because when I was in the room with these guys, they're like, oh, I hate playing against the righty. And it's blocker side for everybody. And the Rangers definitely did target it. And one thing I can tell you that the analytics said was that Charlie Lindgren allowed 39 goals over his high glove during the season. That's second worst in the NHL. So guys are going to be shooting high glove, even though it's the opposite side. But again, from being in practice all those years, I know that players just like to shoot their shot in practice. It's not too often they want to read off the goalie, but they want to make their shot. And it sometimes can become something you rely a little bit too on as a goalie, too, where you know where all your teammates are shooting all day in practice.
Talk with MSG Network, Steve Valiquette. Steve, as the season was coming to a close, we were playing the what-if game. If they finish here, who they would play. Did this play out as well for the Rangers as it could possibly play? The Capitals, are they the team that you wanted them to play, that they were best suited to move through?
Yeah, that's what I felt for sure. And there was time where I thought maybe it was Tampa Bay and they were surging, or even Pittsburgh, which kind of scares you a little bit. They didn't get in, but they have star power up front. The Washington Capitals have gotten old. They're a lot slower. They're really banged up. They're missing 3 regulars on the defense. So they're beat up. They've only really got one guy that's got a ton of speed up front, Connor McMichael. I think it's by far the best matchup. The Rangers are stronger at every single position, and they have elite coaching. Their staff, it's one thing that doesn't get talked enough about, they have an elite coaching staff. It's so amazing, guys, because I saw it develop right before my eyes this year. 3 areas of weakness last year that coaching had a strong impact on improving this year, and which is why they won the President's Trophy. They've got a great forecheck now. They finished with 13 goals in the forecheck this year. That ended up being 3rd in the NHL. They upped their faceoff goals from 9 to 18, and that ranked them 5th from 29th. And rebound goals, they were the worst rebound goal team in the league last year, and they finished fifth this year with 32 rebound goals. So they improved, and those were coaching impacts. I thought the coaches had a great year.
Yeah, because of the players, to a man, it sounded like, Steve, coming out of the exit meetings, said they wanted to be coached. So is that the difference? Because, you know, as good as Gallant was, and let's give him credit, he had success. He took the Vegas Golden Knights to the Stanley Cup Final and had the Rangers close to doing the same thing. But what does that look like? What is Peter doing that Gallant didn't do?
Well, first off, hockey players crave culture and crave structure. And when you can have somebody come in and just put those two things at the forefront of importance and then live by it every day, that changes everything. It changes your mindset. And there is a time during the year where you look around the room and you could be out having a beer or a coffee with the guys and you say it, you know, like, we can't limit this guy. You know, he just can't figure the lines out. He doesn't have a game plan. He's never organized. Like, I've been in those meetings. Like, we talk openly that way. This is an elite coaching staff because of how prepared they are, how hard they work the players in the practices, the structure they play with, the game planning. The other night was a really good example where Panarin got double-shifted. The Rangers score on the next shift with Rempe, and I'm glad Rempe was in. I've always said the two most physical games in the series are games 1 and 3, and it was great to see him in there. And this guy's taken the city by storm, you know, and these are all coaching decisions. And again, I think that they've been so strong at every position. Just a great elite coaching staff.
I'm sorry, Michael. Steve, how much of an impact does Peter have directly on what Lafreniere has become? He had a career year. He made that Panarin goal with that hit along the boards. How much responsibility does Peter take for him?
Well, you know, it's one of those two, right? Like, and I know this gets said. It's the first time he's been coached. You know, to be fair, it's the first time this kid's really been coached. And he came in during the COVID season, so it was a difficult time to adjust. But having the time and the rope to be able to get chemistry with a line, like, you're playing this sport at 20 miles per hour up the ice, and if you're in the coaching blender, we call it, where they're just shooting the lines around and it's a slot machine every day, then it's really difficult to know pace of play, timing, how players want to receive the puck, where they want to carry it, and where they want to get rid of it. Well, Lafreniere started out so slow offensively this season. And you guys know I have a stats company, and within the company we have an expected goals model, and within that model he had the worst numbers in the NHL right around January, mid-January. And then he just went off. And so I give Peter all the respect in the world. By the way, I played for him twice. I played for him in the minor leagues, and I played for him in the NHL. I know him. He's very intimidating, but he can also be a guy that gives you a pat on the back, and when you feel it, it's meant. You know. And I'm sure that there was a little bit of that fatherly love there, where it's, hey, kid, you're getting all these chances. Just stick with it. Keep going. You're going to be fine. Because if I was Lafreniere, I would have been sweating it around mid-January. And then he went off. And the funniest thing about the story was he ended up a little over league average with the chances that he had, and he was finishing.
All right, final thing, Steve. So it looks like, you know, Peter's the perfect coach for this team, and he has succeeded. He's taken three teams to the Stanley Cup 1-1, but he keeps losing jobs. So does he have a short shelf life?
Well, I think every coach does, to be honest, Michael. It's the way the sport is. They recycle through. And one of the things that happens in our sport, I'm not sure if this happens with baseball managers or if it happens in football, but when a guy gets let go somewhere and he's got 2 years remaining on his deal and he wants to still work, he goes to the next franchise, and they work out that deal. He's not getting paid twice. He's not getting paid from Washington and the Rangers this year. Or that's not the case in Peter's case, because he wasn't on a deal. He just didn't get re-upped. But I just think that every coach has a voice that kind of gets stale after a while because of the sport that we play. I mean, we're playing football on ice, and you need a motivator in there every night, and it's not a 16-game season. We're playing 82, and guys get sick of meetings and sick of hearing the same message. And after it doesn't work for a couple of years, it's human nature for guys just to turn off and stop listening. And I think that's always the case in hockey. Very few times do you see somebody at the end of a long coaching tenure win. They win early. You know, John Cooper is somebody that comes to mind in Tampa Bay. But is Tampa Bay getting closer to winning, or will they make a coaching change too soon? We'll see, you know.
Please give Giannone a big kiss for me. He knows how I feel.
Oh, my God. He's on fire right now. You should see him. He's been hysterical. He is ranting and raving. It's been awesome.
That's the John I know from Fordham. Absolutely. Steve, we'll be tuning in.
Hey, thank you very much, guys. Have a great show.
Thanks, man.
You got it. So MSG Networks will have game two tonight and every game of the series, and the pregame coverage starts at 6:30 with Valiquette, Giannone, and Lundqvist. 1-800-919-3776. We'll get back to your phone calls, but Peter has to tell you about FanDuel.
Well, Michael, the road to the NBA Finals start right now. New customers on FanDuel can go on their own playoff run with $150. Just place any $5 bet and you'll get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose, to use during the NBA playoffs. You can bet on three-pointers made and the Suns T-Wolves game, over-under point totals for Dame Lillard in the Bucks game, first basket score, and more. Just go to FanDuel.com/Peter to get started. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 and over and physically present in New York. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. For help with a gambling problem, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY at 467-369.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, Rangers up 1-0. Game at the Garden tonight with the Capitals. Our coverage starts at 6:30.
Yeah.
Puck drops at 7. Dom will do the honors on the pregame show, and then he's going to do the play-by-play games 3 and 4 in Washington. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. Let's go to Steve in Long Island. Stevie.
Hey, guys. What's up? Good show.
Thanks, man.
I enjoyed the interview with Valley. He always gives some good insight into especially the analytical stuff. So I got a question for Don. So let's say Hedl is progressing, right? And he's getting better and they're thinking that he can actually be infused into this lineup. Where do you see him fitting in? Do you see him maybe being thrown into the first line right wing? I know he normally plays center. Do you think they juggle the line, you know, push him down and push Wennberg down? Like if the fourth line is playing well, do you really want to mess with that?
I know, especially the way they played in game one. When it first happened, my speculation was he would fit perfectly with Cooley and Kako, and Wennberg would move down to the fourth line. You move Barkley over to left wing and go from there. Now, somebody's got to come out of the lineup. I don't think it's going to be Barkley Goodrow. He's too experienced. You need him defensively. I'm not taking Jimmy Vesey out of the lineup either. And as much as so it comes down to Rempe or Roslovic. And right now with Rempe, especially with Wilson in this series, it might end up being Roslovic that comes out of the lineup, but I think Hedl on that third rotation and Wennberg dropping to the fourth line, to me, makes the most sense moving forward. And as far as how they get Hedl back in, my speculation seems to be it would be a softer landing. Meaning, let's say they go up 3-0 in this series, because he's a healthy scratch, guys, so he can play.
It just hasn't played since November, so you don't want him to be a liability as he's getting his sea legs back. So, Michael, wouldn't it make sense to bring him in, say, if you're up 3-0 for a game four, a little bit of a margin for error, rather than putting him in, you know, a game one like on Sunday in the beginning of a series? But once you do that, somebody's got to come out of the lineup, and it might be Roslovic, it might be Rempe, we'll see. But where do you fit him in? You don't want to disrupt the chemistry. They hate changing lineups after wins, so it'll be interesting to see when and if he ends up fitting into this lineup.
I wouldn't make any move while they keep winning. I mean, obviously they're not going to, you know, do the Moses Malone 4-4-4. I mean, they're going to lose games. That would be the time to do it. But if you do it after a win and they haven't lost yet and then they lose, I mean, you know, people are going to jump all over that. So I would just be patient. Be patient with the guy.
Yeah. But I do think at some point a healthy Filip Hedl is going to help this team.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you don't want to upset the apple cart. Is that okay? Because there's no apples or carts.
Again, you're not understanding. But
I was just having fun.
I know.
That's not something that they like to do, go back with the same lineup. But I think at some point you want to try to get them in there.
Well, Isles Nation, listen up. ESPN New York has your chance to score tickets to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. Be there to see your New York Islanders take on the Carolina Hurricanes in games 3 and 4 at UBS Arena. Enter to win at ESPNNewYork.com or on the ESPN New York app. Just scroll down to contest, submit your entry, and it's brought to you by the New York Islanders. Be a part of the electric atmosphere at UBS Arena. Get your tickets at NewYorkIslanders.com. I'm very, very upset. I'm very disappointed. Because there was a call that was waiting, and I was just loading up for it, Don.
Oh.
But I was trying to pick it at the right time because we just got off of Balaquette. Mm-hmm. So I saw a Ranger call. Let's go to the Rangers, keep that going. And then I was going to take this call, and he dropped off. The guy's name was Vinny from
Canada. What was it?
The guy wanted to say they should be benching Aaron Judge, too.
No.
And then my question was to Vinny. So, Vinny, I hope you're still listening.
Vinny Gumbats.
Instead of whom? So, Trent Grisham, who are you benching Aaron Judge for? Aaron Judge also has 8 years left on his contract. The Yankees aren't going anywhere if Aaron Judge doesn't hit. The Yankees could go someplace without Gleyber Torres, and the Yankees have a picture-perfect made person to slide in if Torres doesn't hit. That's DJ LeMahieu, because Oswaldo Cabrera is hitting 290, 300, whatever the number is. But benching Aaron Judge doesn't make any sense. Why are people so hot to do this?
Can I?
There's no real clear guy to take over for him.
No.
And they can't win without him anyway.
Hold on. I'm going a step further than you, and I don't care if I'm out of line. I'm right. And if you disagree, guess what, Michael K., voice of the Yankees? You're wrong. Aaron Judge could bat 0-9-6 for the entire season. He's never come in. You might take him out for a game. You might try to give him a break and restart him. He's the entire franchise. You signed him forever. He's the heart and soul of the team. Literally, the season would end, Don, with him batting 124, well, and he's still going to play 135 games. Well, are people out of their mind? So there's no player who is you just know is playing even if they have a bad year?
Well, I don't want to speak for Vinny, and I do think he's out of his mind, but LeMahieu has played over 200 games at first base. So is he suggesting that LeMahieu then come when he comes back, replaces Aaron Judge at first?
But he's not at first, Aaron Judge.
No, but I'm saying when you start to move things around, like you can bench Rizzo. Where are we going with
there's no
Judge
replacement
being out of line
for Aaron Judge? It's a ridiculous thought, and I've seen it on Twitter too. I'm not just jumping on Vinny from Kinect. They should bench Judge. No, Judge has to play to continue to find his way out of it. But you can't keep running Gleyber out there without any power and two RBIs when you have a ready-made replacement in DJ LeMahieu. That was my point. Judge is not getting benched, nor should he get benched.
Yeah, and he's never played the outfield from what I've seen, so I don't know what he could do.
Michael, will you tell me if I'm wrong? Am I wrong?
No.
He could bat 120 the whole year. He's playing all year. He's the team.
He is the captain of the team. You're not benching him. It makes sense that he'll get out of it. But, again...
He'd have to become Chris Davis. How to play baseball. For 3 years, it's never happening.
Right. And if they had a viable replacement, then I understand. Because... You know, you could sit him down for a couple of days, but...
Even then, it would be a couple of days.
Even then, it's just a couple of days, but Trent Grisham is the option? What's wrong with people? How they turned on this guy who's done nothing but give the Yankees his body and... forget it.
Why can't we have two conversations? Let's be reasonable. You can say, hey, I'm a little concerned a month into the season with Aaron Judge.
I should be.
That's totally fine.
I think we are getting close to concern.
Yeah, like, hey, what's going on?
It's not ridiculous anymore.
No. You're allowed
to go. Almost 100 at bats now.
No, and there's something off. There's something going on. You have the right to say that. But the next sentence to then be, and I think you should sit down. Oh, my Lord.
Now, you know what? He must have meant just for a game.
You'd hope. Give him a break.
No, it didn't seem like that.
But the word wouldn't be bench, though. That would be called giving him a day off.
Peter, why don't you tell us about Dodge?
You know what? All right, I will. Hey, New York, it's Peter for Security Dodge, Long Island Ram and Wrangler headquarters. Did you hear about the 30 for 30 sale? Come get some. You can take up to 30% off MSRP during the next 30 days on brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee 4XEs, Gladiators, Wagoneers, Grand Wagoneers, all up to 30% off MSRP. Go visit Michelle Scalise during their Jeep celebration event. Come get some.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.